Breaking news tonight, a massive cyber attack around the world hitting companies and universities in over 70 countries, hospitals held for ransom, emergency rooms closed. Tonight, the U.S. on alert. Threatening Comey, President Trump says he better hope there are no tapes of their conversations. The White House refusing to deny that President Trump has secret recording devices. Plus more of the interview, the president's revealing comments about Comey and the Clinton case. Banned on board, airlines bracing for a potential major expansion of electronics not allowed on flights to the U.S. from Europe. Laptops and e-readers would need to be checked amid fears of hidden explosives. And Mayflowers, a kaleidoscope of colors, an American city's incredible celebration of spring. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. As we come on the air in the West, a massive cyber extortion attack is underway across at least 70 countries tonight, holding computer data hostage for ransom. The Department of Homeland Security is warning American companies to be on guard as the attack sweeps across Europe and beyond, including a network of British hospitals where frozen computer screens force staff to turn away some patients. We get late details from London and NBC's Kelly Cobiella.
Tonight, hospitals and companies around the world held for ransom, a computer virus paralyzing Britain's National Health Service. Emergency rooms closed. Ambulances were diverted. Routine surgeries canceled.
We turned up and for our appointment to have his foot checked. And they said, I'm really sorry, but the computer system is down. You're going to have to go away.
The virus locked computers. On screen, a message demanding $300 in Bitcoin to get access.
This was not targeted at the NHS. It's an international attack.
The attack reportedly affecting computer networks in at least 70 countries. Russia hit the worst, even spreading through that country's interior ministry. Security experts say the virus exploits holes in software security first identified by the National Security Agency and leaked by hackers. It's called WannaDecryptor or WannaCry and infects computer networks first through email, then rapidly expands across a company. The goal? Not patient files or data, just money. Last year, a hospital in L.A. paid $17,000 to unlock their files. In January, a hotel in Austria was hit.
If you keep your security up to date, if you make regular backups of your important data, then you can recover from an incident like this. The problem is many organizations don't defend themselves in advance.
The message to Britain's hospitals, pay up by May 19th or their data will disappear.
It's not yet clear who's behind the attack, but tonight as DHS is putting out that alert to U.S. companies, a Microsoft spokesperson said to guard against the virus, simply make sure your computers are updated and running their latest software. Lester?
Kelly Cobiella in London. Thank you. There is new fallout tonight from our exclusive interview with President Trump, who unleashed a morning tirade on Twitter, including what looked to some like a threat against the FBI director he just fired, telling James Comey he better hope there are no tapes of their conversations. And the White House is refusing to confirm or deny that the president has a secret recording system. Our White House correspondent, Kristen Welker, has details.
President Trump all smiles at this Mother's Day celebration with the First Lady. But this morning, lashing out in a tweet storm, seeming to unleash a warning to his recently fired FBI director. James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Those striking comments come after Mr. Trump described a January 27th dinner with Comey during his interview with Lester.
We had a very nice dinner. And at that time, he told me, you are not under investigation.
That account is now in dispute. So is the president taping his conversations? Today, Mr. Trump didn't deny it.
Well, that I can't talk about. I won't talk about that. All I want is for Comey to be honest.
A similar dodge from his press secretary.
Are there recording devices in the Oval Office or in the residence?
As I said for the third time, there is nothing further to add on that.
There is no example of any modern White House recording any conversations that take place inside it, unless you go back to the very dark, sinister time of Nixon.
The White House is also still trying to explain what led to Comey's firing. After initially blaming his handling of the Clinton investigation, the president now admitting,
I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election that they should have won.
A very different explanation than the ones given initially.
No one from the White House. That was a DOJ decision.
Because of the actions that the Deputy Attorney General outlined.
Increasingly on defense over the mixed messaging, Mr. Trump tweeting today he is an active president. It is not possible for my surrogates to stand at podium with perfect accuracy. And today the president further pushed back against allegations of his business ties to Russia, making public a letter from his attorneys recently sent to Congress. It states that a review of his last 10 years of tax returns do not reflect any income from Russian sources, with some exceptions, including the 2013 Miss Universe pageant held in Moscow. Still, frustrated members of Congress urging Comey to testify.
I would like to know if the president ordered Mr. Comey to end the investigation.
Comey was invited to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday. He's not available then, but lawmakers are working with him to find another time. Also tonight, the president threatening to cancel the daily press briefings, but no final decision yet. Lester.
All right, Kristen Welker at the White House for us tonight. In meantime, friends of James Comey are pushing back against President Trump's version of the dinner the two had, first described in our interview. But still no comment from Comey himself. Our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, has that end of the story.
1 week after his inauguration, President Trump had dinner at the White House with FBI Director James Comey.
Let's talk about James Comey.
The president told Lester Holt that the meeting was Comey's idea.
I had a dinner with him. He wanted to have dinner because he wanted to stay on. We had a very nice dinner at the White House very early on. A dinner was arranged. I think he asked for the dinner. And he wanted to stay on as the FBI head. And I said, I'll, you know, consider. We'll see what happens.
Iran Supreme Leader.
But today, the former director of National Intelligence told NBC's Andrea Mitchell that on the morning of the dinner, Comey said it wasn't his idea.
He mentioned that he had been invited to the White House to have dinner with the president, and that he was uneasy with that because of even compromising even the optics, the appearance of independence, not only of him, but of the FBI.
Several people who knew Comey say they heard from him shortly after the dinner. They say he told him back then that during the dinner, Mr. Trump asked him a couple of times if he would be loyal to the president, and that Comey said he couldn't promise that, but that he could promise he would always be honest. Mr. Trump told Fox News today he never asked about it.
Did you ask that question?
No, I didn't. But I don't think it would be a bad question to ask.
As for the president's tweet that Comey better hope there are no tapes of the conversation, friends of Comey say they're sure he'd be delighted if it was recorded, since the two accounts of what happened are so different. Friends of Comey say the White House invitation came the day before or the day of the dinner, the same time as the Justice Department was warning that Michael Flynn, then the National Security Advisor, lied to the vice president about contact with the Russian ambassador. Lester.
All right. Peter Williams in Washington. Thank you. In firing Comey, the president said he agreed with the Justice Department assessment that Comey's public statements about the Clinton email investigation violated Justice Department principles. As a candidate, Donald Trump supported Comey's reopening of that case. And in my interview with the president yesterday, he appeared to be more concerned that Comey declined to charge Mrs. Clinton than he was about any broken rules.
Wait a minute, was your justification that he shouldn't be doing that, or you didn't like the fact that the investigation didn't lead into an indictment?
When I was a candidate, it's a lot different than being president, but when I was a candidate, I will tell you that what he did, what Comey did, had good moments for me as a candidate. I'm only talking as a candidate. I'm not saying as president where I want to do what's right for the country necessarily. I'm talking purely as a candidate for me to get votes. When he came out with that scathing set of circumstances, the server, the illegal server, the emails, 33,000 emails that you get subpoenaed and then you don't show, and you erase those, you delete them, you get rid of them, you acid wash them. When he did all of that stuff, it was disgraceful. When he's covering everything point after point, I was with lawyers watching that.
They were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
I happened to have some lawyers in the room, unrelated lawyers, and they were saying, wow, she's guilty here, guilty, guilty, guilty. Then he gets to the end, and he said, she's free as a bird.
Although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case.
So you didn't like the outcome?
No, what happened, he had a lot of pressure put on, and he exonerated her. Should have never exonerated her.
The president called Comey's recent explanation of his decisions in the Clinton case horrible. We'll turn now to Ohio, where a gunman today opened fire at a nursing home outside Columbus, killing a police chief and two employees. Chief Stephen Eric Desario was just 36 and a father of six with a baby on the way. He had only been in his job about 3 weeks. The suspected gunman was found dead at the scene. Police have not yet identified him or revealed his motive. Another story out of Ohio tonight, a heartbreaking one concerning an 8-year-old boy who took his own life days after an alleged bullying incident at school. Today, school officials released the video of that incident after the boy's mother claimed the school wasn't being straight with her about what happened. NBC's Blake McCoy has more.
It's been nearly 4 months since Cornelia Reynolds discovered the unthinkable. Her 8-year-old son dead in his bedroom. Gabriel had hanged himself from his bunk bed.
He probably didn't want to say, Ma, somebody bullying or picking on me, you know. He just didn't know how to tell me.
Reynolds spoke with our Cincinnati affiliate, WLWT, days after Gabriel's death and says she was never told her third grader was being bullied. But tonight, this video has been released showing an alleged assault in a school bathroom where Gabriel is knocked unconscious 2 days before he ended his life.
The school district never told Mom that there was a video. They never told Mom that he had been assaulted.
Family attorneys were given the video after they began asking questions. The school district denies any wrongdoing, saying in part, though the connection between this incident at school and Gabriel's suicide are not clear, the district shared this video with police investigators at the time of the incident. Their investigation has concluded and no charges were filed. They say a school nurse checked Gabriel's vitals at the time, which were normal, and called his mom. She says she was only told her son had fainted.
They busted my baby's lip. They busted his nose. And Gabby, I'm sorry.
This new video is prompting the coroner to reopen the death investigation as Gabriel's mother wonders what could have been done if she had only known. Blake McCoy, NBC News.
Sweeping changes are coming to the drug policy in this country after the attorney general announced a tough crackdown. Jeff Sessions ordering federal prosecutors to charge drug offenders with the most serious crimes they can, carrying the maximum punishments, reversing an Obama-era push for more leniency for nonviolent offenders. NBC's Hallie Jackson has details for us.
When Norman Brown was 22, he received a mandatory life sentence for distributing crack cocaine.
I do deserve to have served some time, but that much, I think that was overkill.
After 24 years, his sentence was commuted by then-President Obama in 2015 as part of his push to roll back what he described as excessive penalties for nonviolent lower-level offenders.
Their punishments didn't fit the crime.
Today, a significant shift back to stricter guidelines.
This is a key part of President Trump's promise to keep America safe. If you are a drug trafficker, we will not look the other way.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions is ordering prosecutors to go after the toughest possible sentences, including those with mandatory minimums, allowing for certain exceptions if approved by a U.S. attorney or assistant attorney general. It reverses Obama-era policies that gave more leeway to prosecutors.
What we'll probably be seeing is increasing prison populations in our federal system.
Civil liberties advocates argue the decision will repeat a failed experiment, with former AG Eric Holder, who implemented the old policy, calling the new one not tough on crime, but dumb on crime, quote, an ideologically motivated cookie-cutter approach. As for Norman Brown, he hopes the new attorney general will change his mind.
There are more people like me dying in prison that need to get out and give back.
Hallie Jackson, NBC News, the White House.
Still ahead here tonight, no laptops allowed. Homeland Security considering a massive expansion of its ban on electronic devices larger than a cell phone to hundreds more flights. We'll tell you when it could go into effect. Also, a major scandal for one of the nation's largest banks, maybe bigger than previously thought. We'll be right back.
We're back now with potentially big news in the air. U.S. Homeland Security is considering a new ban on personal electronics carried on passenger aircraft traveling transatlantic, entering the U.S. from Europe. Nothing bigger than a cell phone would be allowed on board. It would be an expansion of a similar ban involving flights from the Middle East amid fears of concealed explosives. NBC's Tom Costello has details.
The order would prohibit passengers from bringing any electronic device larger than a cell phone on flights leaving Europe for the U.S. Laptops, tablets, e-readers, gaming devices, DVD players. As intelligence reports suggest, terrorists have found a way to conceal explosives in personal electronics.
What we might see is this ban go for quite a while until either the threat goes away, which I don't see that happening anytime soon, or all these countries start upgrading their screening technology.
And checked luggage goes through more thorough explosive screening than carry-on bags. Already, U.S. airlines have been told to prepare. Today, Delta prematurely posted a notice in Cincinnati. A similar electronics ban has been in place since late March, affecting flights coming from 10 airports in the Middle East and North Africa, roughly 50 flights a day. But expanding the ban to flights coming from Europe would affect many more flights. 142,000 passengers each day arrive from the eight busiest European countries, a major disruption for business travelers.
Not being able to take my laptop would definitely affect me because I like to do all my work on long-haul flights.
You need the entertainment, you need something to keep you busy.
Another serious concern? The fire risk from loading so many electronic devices with lithium-ion batteries into the plane's luggage hold.
Tonight, Homeland Security says the new electronics ban could be announced within 2 weeks. While some travelers may be upset, security sources say their prime objective is the safety of the aircraft. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
We're back in a moment with former First Lady Michelle Obama fighting back after the Trump administration targeted a piece of her legacy. A scandal at the nation's second largest bank may be far larger than previously thought. Attorneys in a class action lawsuit against Wells Fargo now estimate 3.5 million fake accounts were opened in customers' names in order to meet sales goals. Previously, regulators only disclosed about 2 million. Wells Fargo disputes the new numbers, saying it has not been verified. As we head into the weekend, extreme weather is in the forecast. A nor'easter will affect over 50 million people in the Northeast with heavy rain and high winds. The system will impact D.C. and New York City on Saturday, then Boston on Sunday. There is the potential for flooding, wind gusts up to 40 miles an hour along the coast that could delay travel in the air and on the road for Mother's Day. Back in the spotlight today, former First Lady Michelle Obama speaking out against the Trump administration's decision to roll back healthier school lunch standards that she championed. Mrs. Obama says it's more about more than her legacy.
How are you? How
is it been? Why don't you want our kids to have good food at school? What is wrong with you? And why is that a partisan issue? Why would that be political? What is going on?
The rules Mrs. Obama promoted required more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, but the Trump administration cited complaints that students throw away many of those healthier options. When we come back, now that spring is in full bloom, we'll stop and smell the flowers at one of America's most breathtaking celebrations of the season. Finally, tonight, an amazing springtime sight. A small town with a big celebration inviting visitors to tiptoe through the tulips. Nearly 5 million of them in all the colors of the rainbow. NBC's Kevin Tibbles takes us to Holland. Holland, Michigan, that is, for the story.
Hey! Hey!
Like a breath of fresh air for the senses, the colors have returned to Holland, Michigan.
Spring has sprung!
And just like every year for the last 37, Jan Karsten wants everyone to know.
What attributes do you need to be the town crier?
Well, the first one, obviously, you got to have a big mouth.
For 88 years, they have planted the bulbs and waited patiently to celebrate their Dutch heritage during tulip time. More than 4.5 million tulips and 100 different varieties offered up to those who migrate here every May.
city itself has a population of 33,000. So adding 500,000 of your closest friends and family to the community makes it a little busy.
And Hollanders, like festival director Gwen Arda, spend months preparing their authentic costumes.
Gwen, my feet are killing me.
I know, because you don't have 8 pairs of socks on like I do.
You'd never guess we're here smack in the middle of the great state of Michigan, but this is the only working Dutch windmill in these United States of America.
And in this nation of ours, with its rich assortment of cultures, passing the tradition to the next generation is key. Kids from the local high school demonstrate the aptly named clomping dance, celebrating the roots that grew America by celebrating the arrival of spring. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Holland, Michigan.
That's going to do it for us on a Friday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.